in the pillow, I pass out. When I open my eyes again, it's still dark. I sit up in a panic, trying to remember where I am. All I know is I'm not in my car. It takes several seconds for the events of the last several days to come back to me. Nina offering me the job here, moving out of my car, falling asleep in an honest-to-goodness bed. Gradually, my breathing slows. I fumble on the dresser by my bed for the phone Nina bought me. The time is 3:46 in the morning. Not quite time to get up for the day. I shove the itchy covers off my legs and roll off the cot as my eyes adjust to the light from the moon filtering in through the tiny window. I'll hit the bathroom, then I'll try to fall back to sleep. My feet creak against the bare floorboards of my tiny bedroom. I yawn, taking a second to stretch until my fingertips almost reach the light bulbs on the ceiling. This room makes me feel like a giant. I get to the door of my room and I grab the knob and it doesn't turn. The panic that had drained from my body when I realized where I was now escalates once again. The door is locked. The Winchesters locked me in this room. Nina locked me in this room. But why? Is this all some kind of sick game? Were they looking for some ex-con to trap in here? Someone nobody would miss? My fingers brush against the scratch marks on the door, wondering who the last poor woman trapped in here has been. I knew this had to be too good to be true. Even with the spectacularly dirty kitchen, this seemed like a dream job. I knew Nina had to have done a background check. She probably locked me in here, thinking nobody would ever miss me. I flash back to 10 years ago, the first night when the door to my cell slammed shut, and I knew this would be my home for a long time to come. I swore to myself that if I ever got out, I would never let myself be trapped in any situation ever again. Yet, it's less than a year after I got out, and here I am. But I've got my phone. I can call 911. I snatch up my phone from the dresser where I left it. I had a signal earlier today, but now there's nothing. No bars. No signal. I'm stuck here, with only one tiny window that doesn't open overlooking the backyard. What am I going to do? I reach for the doorknob one more time, wondering if I could somehow knock the door down. But this time, when I turn the knob sharply, it twists in my hand, and the door pops open. I stumble out into the hallway, breathing quickly. I stand there for a moment as my heart rate slows to normal. I was never locked in the room after all. Nina didn't have some crazy plot to trap me in there. The door was just stuck. But I can't seem to shake that uneasy feeling that I should get out of here while I still can. Chapter 7. When I get downstairs in the morning, Nina is systematically destroying the kitchen. She has pulled every pot and pan from the cabinet below the counter. She's ripped half the dishes from above the sink, and several of them are lying broken on the kitchen floor. And now she's going through the refrigerator, haphazardly tossing food onto the floor. I watch in amazement as she takes an entire container of milk out of the refrigerator and hurls it onto the floor. Milk immediately started gushing out, forming a white river around the pots and pans and broken dishes. Nina, I say tentatively. Nina freezes, her hands curled around a bagel. She whips her head around to look at me. Where is it?
Where is what?
My notes! She lets out an anguished cry. I left all my notes for the PTA meeting tonight on the kitchen counter, and now they're gone. What did you do with them?
First of all, why would she think her notes were in the refrigerator?
Second, I am certain I didn't throw out her notes. I mean, I'm 99% certain. Is there some tiny chance that there was a little crumpled up piece of paper on the counter that I assumed was garbage and threw away? Yes. I can't rule out the possibility. But I was pretty careful about not throwing away anything that wasn't garbage.
To be fair, almost everything was garbage.
I didn't do anything with them, I say. Nina plants her fists on her hips.
So you're saying my notes just walked away?
No, I'm not saying that. I take a careful step toward her, and my sneaker crunches on a broken plate. I make a note to myself to never come into the kitchen barefoot. But maybe you left them somewhere else?
I did not,
she snaps at me.
I left them right here.
She slams her palm on the kitchen counter loud enough that I jump.
Right on this counter. And now, gone. Vanished.
All the commotion has gotten the attention of Andrew Winchester. He wanders into the kitchen, wearing a dark suit that makes him look even more handsome than he looked yesterday, if that was possible. He is clearly in the process of tying his tie, but his fingers freeze mid-knot when he sees the mess on the floor.
Nina?
Nina turns to look at her husband, her eyes brimming with tears.
Millie threw out my notes for the meeting tonight.
I open my mouth to protest, but it's pointless. Nina is certain I threw out her notes, and it's entirely possible I did. I mean, if they were so important, why would she just leave them lying on the kitchen counter? The way the kitchen looked yesterday, it could have been condemned.
That's terrible. Andrew opens his arms and she flies into them. But don't you have some of your notes saved on the computer?
Nina sniffles into his expensive suit. She's probably getting snot all over it, but Andrew doesn't seem to mind.
Some of them. But I'll have to redo a lot of it.
And then she turns to look at me accusingly. I'm done trying to assert my innocence. If she is sure that I threw out her notes, the best thing to do is just apologize.
I'm so sorry, Nina, I say. If there's anything I can do.
Nina's eyes lower onto the disaster on the kitchen floor.
You can clean up this disgusting mess you left in my kitchen while I fix this problem.
With those words, she stomps out of the kitchen. Her footsteps disappear up the stairs as I contemplate how I'm going to clean up all these broken dishes, now intermingled with spilled milk and about 20 grapes rolling around the floor. I stepped on one of them, and it's all over the bottom of my sneaker. Andrew lingers behind in the kitchen, shaking his head. Now that Nina has left, I feel like I should say something.
Listen, I say. I wasn't the one who...
I know, he says, before I can get out my protest of innocence.
Nina is high-strung, but she has a good heart.
Yeah. He pulls off his dark jacket and starts rolling up the sleeves of his crisp white dress shirt.
Let me help you get this cleaned up.
You don't have to do that.
It'll be faster if we work together.
He goes into the closet by the kitchen and pulls out the mop. I'm shocked he knew exactly where it was. Actually, he knows his way around the closet of cleaning supplies very well. And now I get it. Nina has done things like this before. He's gotten used to cleaning up her messes. But still, I work here now. This isn't his job. I'll clean it up. I put my hand on the mop he's holding and tug it away from him. You're all dressed up, and this is what I'm here for. For a moment, he holds onto the mop. Then he allows me to take it from him.
Okay, thanks, Millie. I appreciate your hard work.
At least somebody does. As I get to work cleaning the kitchen, I think back to the photograph on the mantle of Andrew and Nina when they were first together, before they were married, before they had Cecilia. They look so young and happy together. It's obvious Andrew is still crazy about Nina, but something has changed. I can sense it. Nina isn't the person she used to be. But it doesn't matter. It's none of my business.
Chapter 8.
Nina must have thrown half the contents of the refrigerator on the kitchen floor, so I have to make a run to the grocery store today. Since, apparently, I'm also going to be cooking for them, I select some raw meat and seasoning that I can use to throw together a few meals. Nina loaded her credit card onto my phone. Everything I buy will be automatically charged to their account. In prison, the food options were not too exciting. The menu rotated between chicken, hamburgers, hot dogs, lasagna, burritos, and a mysterious fish patty that always made me gag. There would be vegetables on the side that would be cooked to the point of disintegration. I used to fantasize about what I would eat when I got out, but on my budget, the options weren't much better. I could only buy what was on sale, and once I was living in my car, I was even more restricted. It's different shopping for the Winchesters. I go straight for the finest cut of steak. I'll look up on YouTube how to cook them. I sometimes used to cook steak for my father, but that was a long time ago. If I buy expensive ingredients, they'll come out good no matter what I do. When I get back to the Winchester house, I've got 4 overflowing bags of groceries in the trunk of my car. Nina and Andrew's cars take up the 2 spots in the garage, and she instructed me not to park in the driveway, so I have to leave my car on the street. As I'm fumbling to get the bags out of the trunk, the landscaper Enzo emerges from the house next to ours with some sort of scary gardening device in his right hand. Enzo notices me struggling, and after a moment of hesitation, he jogs over to my car. He frowns at me.
"I do it,"
he says in his heavily accented English. I start to take one of the bags, but then he scoops all 4 of them up in his massive arms, and he carries them to the front door. He nods at the door, waiting patiently for me to unlock it. I do it as quickly as possible, given that he's carrying about 80 pounds worth of groceries in his arms. He stomps his boots on the welcome mat, then carries the groceries the rest of the way into the kitchen and deposits them on the kitchen counter. "Gracias," I say. His lips twitch.
"No, grazie."
"Grazie," I repeat. He lingers in the kitchen for a moment, his brows knitted together. I notice again that Enzo is handsome, in a dark and terrifying sort of way. He's got tattoos on his upper arms, partially obscured by his t-shirt. I can make out the name Antonia inscribed in a heart on his right biceps. Those muscular arms could kill me without him even breaking a sweat if he got it in his head to do so. But I don't get a sense that this man wants to hurt me at all. If anything, he seems concerned about me. I remember what he mumbled to me before Nina interrupted us the other day. Pericolo. Danger. What was he trying to tell me? Does he think I'm in danger here? Maybe I should download a translator app on my phone. He could type in what he wants to tell me and... A noise from upstairs interrupts my thoughts. Enzo sucks in a breath.
"I go,"
he says, turning on his heel and striding back toward the door. "But..." I hurry after him, but he's much faster than me. He's out the front door before I've even cleared the kitchen. I stand in the living room for a moment, torn between putting away the groceries and going after him. But then the decision is made for me when Nina comes down the stairs to the living room wearing a white pantsuit. I don't think I've ever seen her wear anything besides white. It does complement her hair, but the effort of keeping it clean would drive me crazy. Of course, I'm going to be the one taking care of the laundry from now on. I make a note to myself to buy more bleach next time I'm at the grocery store. Nina sees me standing there, and her eyebrows shoot up to her hairline.
"Millie?"
I force a smile. "Yes?"
"I heard voices down here. Were you having company?"
"No, nothing like that."
"You may not invite strangers into our home."
She frowns at me.
"If you want to have any guests over, I expect you to ask permission and give us at least 2 days' notice. And I would ask you to keep them in your room."
"It was just that landscaper guy," I explain. "He was helping me carry groceries into the house. That's all. I'd expected the explanation would satisfy Nina, but instead her eyes darken. A muscle twitches under her right eye.
The landscaper? Enzo? He was here?
I rub the back of my neck. Is that his name? I don't know. He just carried the groceries in. Nina studies my face as if trying to detect a lie.
I don't want him inside this house again. He's filthy from working outside. I work so hard to keep this house clean.
I don't know what to say to that. Enzo wiped his boots off when he came into the house, and he didn't track in any dirt. And nothing is comparable to the mess I saw when I first walked into this house yesterday.
Do you understand me, Millie?
She presses me. Yes, I say quickly. I understand. Her eyes flick over me in a way that makes me very uncomfortable. I shift between my feet.
By the way, how come you never wear your glasses?
My fingers fly to my face.
Why did I wear those stupid glasses the first day? I should never have worn them.
And when she asked me about them yesterday, I shouldn't have lied. She arches an eyebrow.
I was up in the bathroom in the attic, and I didn't see any contact lens solution. I didn't mean to snoop, but if you're going to be driving around with my child at some point, I expect you to have good vision.
Right. I wipe my sweaty hands on my jeans. I should just come clean. The thing is, I don't really... I clear my throat. I don't actually need glasses. The ones I was wearing at my interview were more sort of decorative, you know? She licks her lips.
I see. So you lied to me.
I wasn't lying. It was a fashion statement.
Yes.
Her blue eyes are like ice.
But then later I asked you about it, and you said you had on contacts, didn't you?
Oh, I wring my hands together. Well, I guess, yes, I was lying that time. I guess I felt embarrassed about the glasses. I'm really sorry. The corners of her lips tug down.
Please don't lie to me ever again.
I won't. I'm so sorry. She stares at me for a moment, her eyes unreadable. Then she glances around the living room, her eyes sweeping over every surface.
And please clean up this room. I'm not paying you to flirt with the landscaper.
With those words, Nina strides out the front door, slamming it behind her.
Chapter 9.
Nina is at her PTA meeting tonight, the one I ruined by throwing out her notes. She is grabbing a bite to eat with some of the other parents, so I've been tasked with making dinner for Andrew and Cecilia. The house is so much quieter when Nina isn't here. I'm not sure why, but she just has an energy that fills the entire space. Right now, I'm alone in the kitchen, searing a filet mignon in the frying pan before sticking it in the oven, and it's heavenly silent in the Winchester household. It's nice. This job would be so great if not for my boss. Andrew has incredible timing. He comes home just as I'm taking the steaks out of the oven and letting them rest on the kitchen counter. He peeks into the kitchen.
Smells great. Again.
Thanks. I add a little bit more salt to the mashed potatoes, which are already drenched in butter and cream. Can you tell Cecilia to come down? I called her twice, but... Actually, I called up to her 3 times. She has not yet answered me. Andrew nods. Gotcha. Shortly after Andrew disappears into the dining room and calls her name, I hear her quick footsteps on the staircase. So that's how it's gonna be. I put together 2 plates containing the steak, mashed potatoes, and a side of broccoli. The portions are smaller on Cecilia's plate, and I'm not going to enforce whether she eats the broccoli or not. If her father wants her to eat it, he can make her do it. But I would be remiss if I didn't provide vegetables. When I was growing up, my mother always made sure to have a serving of vegetables on a dinner plate. I'm sure she's still wondering where she went wrong with raising me. Cecilia is wearing another of her overly fancy dresses in an impractical pale color. I've never seen her wear normal kid clothing, and it just seems wrong. You can't play in the dresses Cecilia wears. They're too uncomfortable, and they show every speck of dirt. She sits down at one of the chairs at the dining table, takes the napkin I laid out, and places it down on her lap daintily. For a moment, I'm a bit charmed. Then she opens her mouth.
"Why did you give me water?"
She crinkles her nose at the glass of filtered water I put at her place setting.
"I hate water. Get me apple juice."
If I had spoken to somebody like that when I was a child, my mother would have smacked my hand and told me to say please. But Cecilia isn't my child, and I haven't managed to endear myself to her yet in the time I've been here. So I smile politely, take the water away, and bring her a glass of apple juice. When I place the new glass in front of her, she carefully examines it. She holds it up to the light, narrowing her eyes.
"This glass is dirty. Get me another one."
"It's not dirty," I protest. "It just came out of the dishwasher."
"It's smudged," she makes a face. "I don't want it. Give me another one."
I take a deep, calming breath. I am not going to fight with this little girl. If she wants a new glass for her apple juice, I'll get her a new glass. As I'm fetching Cecilia her new glass, Andrew comes out to the dining table. He's removed his tie and unbuttoned the top button on his white dress shirt. Just the tiniest hint of chest hair peeks out, and I have to look away. Men are something I'm still learning how to navigate in my post-incarceration life. And by learning, I of course mean that I am completely avoiding it. At my last job waitressing at that bar, my only job since I got out, customers would inevitably ask me out. I always said no. There just isn't room in my messed up life right now for something like that.
And of course, the men who asked me were men I wouldn't have ever wanted to go out with. I went to prison when I was 17. I wasn't a virgin, but my only experiences included clumsy high school sex. Over my time in jail, I would sometimes feel the tug around attractive male guards. Sometimes the tug was almost painful. And one of the things I looked forward to when I got out was the possibility of having a relationship with a man, or even just feeling a man's lips against mine. I want it. Of course I do. But not now. Someday. Still, when I look at a man like Andrew Winchester, I think about the fact that I haven't even touched a man in over a decade. Not like that, anyway. He's not anything like those creeps at the seedy bar where I used to wait tables. When I do eventually put myself back out there, he's the sort of man I'm looking for. Except, obviously, not married. An idea occurs to me. If I ever want to release a little tension, Enzo might be a good candidate. No, he doesn't speak English. But if it's just one night, it shouldn't matter. He looks like he would know what to do without having to say much. And unlike Andrew, he doesn't wear a wedding ring. Although I can't help but wonder about this Antonia person whose name is tattooed on his arm. I wrench myself from my fantasies about the sexy landscaper as I return to the kitchen to retrieve the two plates of food. Andrew's eyes light up when he sees the juicy steak seared to perfection. I am really proud of how it came out. "This looks incredible, Millie," he says. "Thanks," I say. I look over at Cecilia, who has the opposite response.
"Yuck. This is steak."
Stating the obvious, I guess. "Steak is good, Cece," Andrew tells her. "You should try it." Cecilia looks at her father, then back down at her plate. She prods her steak gingerly with her fork, as if she's anxious it might leap off the plate and into her mouth. She has a pained expression on her face. "Cece," Andrew says. I look between Cecilia and Andrew, not sure what to do. It hits me now that I probably shouldn't have made steak for a 9-year-old girl. I just assumed she had to have highbrow taste, living in a place like this. I say, should I? Andrew pushes back his chair and grabs Cecilia's plate from the table.
Okay, I'll make you some chicken nuggets.
I follow Andrew back into the kitchen, apologizing profusely. He just laughs.
Don't worry about it. Cecilia is obsessed with chicken, and especially chicken nuggets. We could be dining at the fanciest restaurant in Long Island, and she'll order chicken nuggets.
My shoulders relax a bit. You don't have to do this. I can make her chicken nuggets. Andrew lays her plate down on the kitchen counter and wags a finger at me.
Oh, but I do. If you're going to work here, you need a tutorial.
Okay. He wrenches the freezer open and pulls out a giant family pack of chicken nuggets.
See, these are the nuggets Cecilia likes. Don't get any other brands. Anything else is unacceptable.
He fumbles with the Ziploc seal on the bag and removes one of the frozen nuggets.
Also, they must be dinosaur-shaped. Dinosaur. Got that?
I can't suppress a smile. Got it. Also, he holds up the chicken nugget.
You have to first examine the nugget for any deformities. Missing head, missing leg, or missing tail. If the dinosaur nugget has any of these critical defects, it will be rejected.
Now he pulls a plate from the cabinet above the microwave. He lays 5 perfect nuggets on the plate.
She likes to have 5 nuggets. You put it in the microwave for exactly 90 seconds. Any less, it's frozen. Any more, and it's overcooked. It's a very tenuous balance.
I nod solemnly. I understand. As the chicken nuggets rotate in the microwave, he glances around the kitchen, which is at least twice as large as the apartment I was evicted from.
I can't even tell you how much money we spent renovating this kitchen, and Cecilia won't eat anything that doesn't come out of the microwave.
The words spoiled brat are at the tip of my tongue, but I don't say them. She knows what she likes.
She sure does.
The microwave beeps, and he pulls out the plate of piping hot chicken nuggets.
How about you? Have you eaten yet?
I'll just bring some food up to my room. He raises an eyebrow.
You don't want to join us?
Part of me would like to join him. There's something very engaging about Andrew Winchester, and I can't help but want to get to know him better. But at the same time, it would be a mistake. If Nina walked in and saw the two of us laughing it up at the dining table, she wouldn't like it. I also have a feeling that Cecilia won't make the evening pleasant. I'd rather just eat in my room, I say. He looks like he's going to protest, but then he thinks better of it.
Sorry,
he says.
We've never had live-in help before, so I'm not sure about the etiquette.
Me either, I admit. But I don't think Nina would like it if she saw me eating with you. I hold my breath, wondering if I've overstepped by stating the obvious. But Andrew just nods.
You're probably right.
Anyway, I lift my chin to look at his eyes. Thank you for the tutorial on the chicken nuggets. He grins at me.
Anytime.
Andrew takes the plate of chicken back into the dining room. When he's gone, I gobble up the food from Cecilia's rejected plate while standing over the kitchen sink, then return to my bedroom. Chapter 10. A week later, I come down to the living room and find Nina holding a full garbage bag. My first thought is, oh God, what now? In only a week of living with the Winchesters, I feel like I've been here for years. No, centuries. Nina's moods are wildly unpredictable. At one moment, she's hugging me and telling me how much she appreciates having me here. In the next, she's berating me for not completing some task she never even told me about. She's flighty, to say the least. And Cecilia is a total brat, who clearly resents my presence here. If I had any other options, I would quit. But I don't. so I don't. The only member of the family who isn't completely intolerable is Andrew. He is not around much, but my few interactions with him have been uneventful. And at this point, I'm thrilled with uneventful. Truthfully, I feel sorry for Andrew sometimes. It can't be easy being married to Nina. I hover at the entrance to the living room, trying to figure out what Nina could possibly be doing with a garbage bag. Does she want me to sort the garbage from now on, alphabetically and by color and odor? Have I purchased some sort of an acceptable garbage bag, and now I need to rebag the garbage? I can't even begin to guess. Millie! She calls out. My stomach clenches. I have a feeling I'm about to figure out what she wants me to do with the garbage. Yes? She waves me over to her. I try to walk over like I'm not being led to my execution. It's not easy. Is there something wrong? I ask. Nina picks up the heavy garbage bag and drops it on her gorgeous leather sofa. I grimace, wanting to warn her not to get garbage all over the expensive leather material. I just went through my closet, she says. And unfortunately, a few of my dresses have gotten a tad too small. So I've collected them in this bag. Would you be a dear and take this to a donation bin? Is that it? That's not so bad. Of course, no problem. Actually, Nina takes a step back, her eyes raking over me. What size are you? 6? Her face lights up. Oh, that's perfect. These dresses are all size 6 or 8. 6 or 8? Nina looks like she's at least a size 14. She must not have cleared out her closet in a while. Oh,
you should take them, she says. You don't have any nice clothes.
I flinch at her statement, although she's right. I don't have any nice clothing. I'm not sure if I should.
Of course you should.
She thrusts the bag in my direction.
They would look amazing on you. I insist.
I accept the bag from her and nudge it open. There's a little white dress on top, and I pull it out. It looks incredibly expensive, and the material is so soft. I want to bathe in it. She's right. This would look amazing on me. It would look amazing on anyone. If I do decide to get out there and start dating again, it would be nice to have some decent clothing, even if it is all white. Okay, I agree. Thank you so much. This is so generous of you.
You're very welcome. I hope you enjoy them.
And if you ever decide you want it back, just let me know. When she throws back her head and laughs, her double chin wobbles.
I don't think I'm going to drop any dress sizes anytime soon, especially since Andy and I are having a baby.
My mouth falls open. You're pregnant? I'm not sure if Nina being pregnant is a good or bad thing, although that would explain her moodiness. But she shakes her head.
Not yet. We've been trying for a bit, but no luck. But we're both really eager to have a baby, and we've got an appointment with a specialist soon. So I would guess in the next year or so, there will be another little one in the house.
I'm not sure how to respond. Congratulations.
Thank you.
She beams at me.
Anyway, please enjoy the clothes, Millie. Also, I have something else for you.
She fishes around in her white purse and pulls out a key.
You wanted a key to your room, didn't you?
Thank you. After that first night when I woke up in terror thinking I was locked in the room, I haven't given that much thought to the lock on the door. I have noticed the door sticks a bit, but nobody is sneaking up to my room and locking me in there. Not that the key would help if I were inside. But I pocket the key. It might be good to lock the door when I leave the room. Nina seems like somebody who might snoop. Also, this seems like a good time to bring up another of my concerns. One other thing. The window in the room doesn't open. It seems like it's painted shut.
Is it?
Nina sounds like she finds this to be a particularly uninteresting piece of information. It's a fire hazard,
probably. She looks down at her nails and frowns at one where the white paint is chipped.
I don't think so.
Well, I'm not sure, but, I mean, the room should have a window that opens, shouldn't it? It does get awfully stuffy up there.
It doesn't actually get stuffy. The attic is drafty, if anything. But I'll say what I have to if it means getting the window fixed. I hate the idea of the only window in the room being painted shut.
I'll have somebody take a look at it then,
she says in a way that makes me think she is absolutely never going to get somebody to take a look at it, and I will never have a window that opens. She glances down at the garbage bag.
Millie, I'm happy to give you my clothes, but please don't leave that garbage bag lying around our living room. It's bad manners.
Oh, sorry, I mumble. And then she sighs like she just doesn't know what to do with me.
Chapter 11
Millie!
Nina's voice sounds frantic on the other line.
I need you to pick up Cecilia from school.
I've got a pile of laundry balanced in my arms, and my cell phone is between my shoulder and my ear. I always pick up immediately when Nina calls, no matter what I'm doing, because if I don't, she will call over and over and over until I do. Sure, no problem, I say.
Oh, thank you,
Nina gushes.
You're such a dear. Just grab her from the Winter Academy at 2:45. You're the best, Millie.
Before I can ask any other questions, like where I'm supposed to meet Cecilia, or the address of the Winter Academy, Nina has hung up. As I remove the phone wedged under my ear, I feel a jolt of panic when I see the time. I've got less than 15 minutes to figure out where the school is and retrieve my employer's daughter. Laundry is going to have to wait. I type the name of the school into Google as I sprint down the stairs. Nothing comes up. The closest school by that name is in Wisconsin, and even though Nina makes some odd requests, I doubt she expects me to pick her daughter up in Wisconsin in 15 minutes. I call Nina back, but naturally, she doesn't pick up. Neither does Andy when I try him. Great. While I pace across the kitchen trying to figure out what to do next, I notice a piece of paper stuck to the refrigerator with a magnet. It's a school holiday schedule from the Windsor Academy. She said winter. Winter Academy. I'm sure of it. Didn't she? I don't have time to wonder if Nina told me the wrong name or if she doesn't know the name of the school her daughter attends, where she is also vice president of the PTA. Thankfully, there's an address on the flyer, so I know exactly where to go, and I've only got 10 minutes to get there. The Winchesters live in a town that boasts some of the best public schools in the country, but Cecilia goes to a private school, because of course she does. The Windsor Academy is a huge, elegant structure with lots of ivory columns, dark brown bricks, and ivy running along the walls that makes me feel like I'm picking Cecilia up at Hogwarts or something unreal like that. One other thing I wish Nina had warned me about was the parking situation at pickup time. It is an absolute nightmare. I have to drive around for several minutes searching for a spot, and I finally squeeze in between a Mercedes and a Rolls Royce. I'm scared somebody might tow my dented Nissan just on principle. Given how little time I had to get to the school, I'm huffing and puffing as I sprint to the entrance. And naturally, there are 5 separate entrances. Which one will Cecilia be coming out of? There's no indication where I should go. I try calling Nina again, but once more, the call goes to voicemail. Where is she? It's none of my business, but the woman doesn't have a job, and I do all the chores. What could she be doing with herself? After questioning several irritable parents, I ascertain that Cecilia will be coming out of the very last entrance on the right side of the school. But just because I am determined not to screw this up, I approach 2 immaculately dressed women chatting by the door and ask, "Is this the exit for the 4th graders?"
"Yes, it is."
The thinner of the 2 women, a brunette with the most perfectly shaped eyebrows I've ever seen, looks me up and down.
"Who are you looking for?"
I squirm under her gaze.
Cecilia Winchester?
The two women exchanged knowing looks.
You must be the new maid Nina hired,
the shorter woman, a redhead, says. Housekeeper, I correct her, although I don't know why. Nina can call me whatever she wants. The brunette snickers at my comment, but doesn't say anything about it.
So, how is it so far working there?
She's digging for dirt. Good luck with that. I'm not going to give her any. It's great. The women exchange looks again.
So, Nina isn't driving you crazy?
The redhead asks me. What do you mean? I say carefully. I don't want to gossip with these harpies, but at the same time, I'm curious about Nina.
Nina is just a bit high-strung,
the brunette says.
Nina is nuts,
the redhead pipes up.
Literally.
I suck in a breath.
What?
The brunette elbows the redhead hard enough to make her gasp.
Nothing. She's just joking around.
At that moment, the doors to the school swing open and children pour out. If there were any chance to get more information out of these two women, the chance is gone as they both move in the direction of their own fourth graders. But I can't stop thinking about what they said. I spot Cecilia's pale blonde hair near the entrance. Even though most of the other kids are wearing jeans and t-shirts, she's wearing another lacy dress, this one a pale sea green. She sticks out like a sore thumb. I've no problem keeping her in my sight as I move toward her. Cecilia! I wave my arm frantically as I get closer. I'm here to pick you up! Cecilia looks at me like she would much rather get into the back of the van of some bearded homeless man than go home with me. She shakes her head and turns away from me. Cecilia, I say more sharply, come on. Your mom said I should pick you up. She turns back to look at me, and her eyes say she thinks I'm a moron.
No, she didn't. Sophia's mother is picking me up and taking me to karate.
Before I can protest, a woman in her 40s wearing yoga pants and a pullover comes over and rests her hand on Cecilia's shoulder. Ready for karate, girls? I blink up at the woman. She does not appear to be a kidnapper. But there's obviously been some misunderstanding. Nina called me and told me to pick up Cecilia. She was very clear about it. Well, except for the part where she told me the wrong school. But other than that, she was very clear. Excuse me, I say to the woman. I work for the Winchesters, and Nina asked me to pick up Cecilia today. The woman arches an eyebrow and places a recently manicured hand on her hip.
I don't think so. I pick up Cecilia every single Wednesday and take the girls to karate. Nina didn't mention a change in plans. Maybe you got it wrong.
I didn't, I say, but my voice wavers. The woman reaches into her Gucci purse and whips out her phone.
Let's clear this up with Nina, shall we?
I watch as the woman presses a button on her phone. She taps her long fingernails against her purse as she waits for Nina to pick up.
Hello, Nina. It's Rachel.
She pauses.
Yes, well, there's a girl here saying you told her to pick up Cecilia, but I explained to her that I take Cecilia to karate every Wednesday.
Another long pause as the woman, Rachel, nods.
Right, that's exactly what I told her. I'm so glad I checked.
After another pause, Rachel laughs.
I know exactly what you mean. It's so hard to find somebody good.
It's not hard to imagine Nina's end of the conversation. Well, Rachel says,
just as I thought. Nina says you got it mixed up. So I'm going to go ahead and take Cecilia to karate.
And then, to put the icing on the cake, Cecilia sticks her tongue out at me. But on the plus side, I don't have to drive home with her. I take out my own phone, checking for a message from Nina, retracting her request that I pick up Cecilia. There's nothing. I shoot off a text to her. A woman named Rachel just spoke with you and said you asked her to bring Cecilia to karate. So I'll go home then? Nina's reply comes a second later.
Yes. Why on earth did you think I wanted you to pick up Cecilia?
Because you asked me to. My jaw twitches, but I can't let it get to me.
This is just how Nina is. And there are plenty of good things about working for her. Or with her, ha. Huh? She's just a little flighty. A little eccentric.
Nina is nuts. Literally.
I can't help but think back to what that nosy redhead said to me. What did she mean by that? Is Nina more than just an eccentric and demanding boss? Is there something else going on with her? Maybe it's better if I don't know.
Chapter 12.
Even though I had resigned myself to minding my own business about Nina's mental health history, I can't help but wonder. I work for this woman. I live with this woman. And there's something else strange about Nina. Like this morning, as I'm cleaning the master bathroom, I can't help but think nobody with good mental health could leave the bathroom in this sort of disorder. The towels on the floor, the toothpaste tugging the basin of the sink. I know depression can sometimes make people unmotivated to clean up. But Nina motivates herself enough to get out and about every day, wherever she goes. The worst thing was finding a used tampon on the floor a few days ago. A used, bloody tampon. I wanted to throw up. While I'm scrubbing the toothpaste and the globs of makeup adhered to the sink, my eyes stray to the medicine cabinet. If Nina's actually nuts, she's probably on medication, right? But I can't look in the medicine cabinet. That would be a massive violation of trust. But then again, it's not like anyone would know if I took a look. Just a quick look. I look out at the bedroom. Nobody's in there. I peek around the corner just to make absolutely sure. I'm alone. I go back into the bathroom, and after a moment of hesitation, I nudge the medicine cabinet open. Wow. There are a lot of medications in here. I pick up one of the orange pill bottles. The name on it is Nina Winchester. I read off the name of the medication. Haloperidol. Whatever that is. I start to pick up a second pill bottle when a voice floats down the hallway.
Millie! Are you in there?
Oh no. I hastily stuff the bottle back in the cabinet and slam it shut. My heart is racing, and a cold sweat breaks out on my palms. I plaster a smile on my face just in time for Nina to burst into the bedroom, wearing a white sleeveless blouse and white jeans. She stops short when she sees me in the bathroom.
What are you doing?
She asks me. I'm cleaning the bathroom. I'm not looking at your medications, that's for sure. Nina squints at me. And for a moment, I'm certain she's going to accuse me of going through the medicine cabinet. And I'm a horrible liar, so she'll almost certainly know the truth. But then her eyes fall on the sink.
How do you clean the sink?
She asks. I lift the spray bottle in my hand. I use this sink cleaner.
Is it organic?
I look at the bottle I picked up at the grocery store last week. No, it isn't. Nina's face falls.
I really prefer organic cleaning products, Millie. They don't have as many chemicals. You know what I mean?
Right. I don't say what I'm thinking, which is, I can't believe a woman who is taking that many medications is concerned about a few chemicals in a cleaning product. I mean, yes, it's in her sink, but she's not ingesting it. It's not going into her bloodstream.
I just feel like,
she frowns.
You aren't doing a good job getting the sink clean. Can I watch how you're doing it? I'd like to see what you're doing wrong.
She wants to watch me clean her sink? Okay. I spray more of the product in her sink and scrub at the porcelain until the toothpaste residue vanishes. I glance over at Nina, who is nodding thoughtfully.
That's fine, she says. I guess the real question is, how are you cleaning the sink when I'm not watching you?
The same?
I highly doubt that. She rolls her eyes. Anyway, I don't have time to supervise your cleaning all day. Try to make sure to do a thorough job this time.
Right,
I mutter.
Okay, I will.
Nina wanders out of the bedroom to go to the spa or a luncheon with her friends or whatever the hell she does to fill her time because she doesn't have a job. I look back at the sink, which is now spotless. I get seized by the irrepressible urge to dunk her toothbrush in the toilet. I don't dunk her toothbrush in the toilet, but I do take out my phone and punch in the word haloperidol. Several hits filled the screen. Haloperidol is an antipsychotic medication used to treat schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, delirium, agitation, and acute psychosis. And that's just one of at least a dozen pill bottles. God knows what else is in there. Part of me is burning with shame that I looked in the first place, and part of me is scared at what else I might find.
Chapter 13.
I'm busy vacuuming the living room when the shadow goes by the window. I wander over to the window, and sure enough, Enzo is working in the backyard today. As far as I can tell, he alternates houses from day to day, doing various gardening and landscaping tasks. Right now, he's digging at the flower bed in the front yard. I grab an empty glass from the kitchen and fill it up with cold water. Then I head outside. I'm not entirely sure what I hope to accomplish here, but ever since those two women talked about Nina being crazy, literally, I can't stop thinking about it. And then I found that antipsychotic medication in her medicine cabinet. Far be it from me to judge Nina for having psychological problems. I met my fair share of women struggling with mental illness in prison, but it would be helpful information for me to know. Maybe I could even help her if I understood her better. I remember how on my first day Enzo seemed to be warning me about something. Nina is out of the house, Andrew is at work, and Cecilia is at school, so this seems like a perfect time to interrogate him. The only tiny complication is that he hardly speaks a word of English. But it can't hurt, and I'm sure he's thirsty and will appreciate the water. When I get outside, Enzo is busy digging a hole in the ground. He seems intensely focused on his task, even after I clear my throat loudly. Twice. Finally, I wave my hand and say, "Hola!" That may have been Spanish again. Enzo looks up from the hole he was digging. There's an amused expression on his lips. "Ciao," he says. "Ciao," I correct myself, vowing to get it right next time. He has a V of sweat on his t-shirt, which is sticking to his skin and emphasizing every single muscle. And they're not bodybuilder's muscles. They're the firm muscles of a man who does manual labor for a living. So I'm staring. So sue me. I clear my throat again. "I brought you, water. How do you say aqua?" he says. I nod vigorously. "Yes, that." See, we're doing it. We're communicating. This is going great. Enzo strides over to me and gratefully takes the water glass. He drains half of it in what looks like a single gulp. He lets out a sigh and wipes his lips with the back of his hand.
"Grazie."
"You're welcome." I smile up at him. "So, have you worked for the Winchesters for a long time?" He looks at me blankly. "I mean, do you work here many years?" He takes another swig from the water glass. He's emptied nearly 3/4 of it. When it's gone, he's going to go back to work. I don't have much time.
"3 anni,"
he says finally, then adds in his heavily accented English,
"3 year."
"And, I squeeze my hands together. "Nina Winchester. Do you..." He frowns at me, but it's not a blank look, like he doesn't understand me. He looks like he's waiting to hear what I'm going to say. Maybe he understands English better than he can speak it. "Do you..." I start again.
Do you think that Nina is... I mean, do you like her?
Enzo narrows his eyes at me. He takes another long drink from the water glass, then shoves it back into my hand. Without another word, he goes back to the hole he was digging, picks up his shovel, and gets back to work. I open my mouth to try again, but then I shut it. When I first came here, Enzo was trying to warn me about something. But Nina opened the door before he could say anything. And obviously, he's changed his mind. Whatever Enzo knows or thinks, he isn't going to tell me. At least not now.
Chapter 14.
I've been living with the Winchesters for about 3 weeks when I have my first parole officer meeting. I waited to schedule it for my day off. Don't want them to know where I'm going. I'm down to monthly meetings with my officer Pam, a stocky, middle-aged woman with a strong jaw. Right after I got out, I was living in housing subsidized by the prison, but after Pam helped me get that waitressing job, I moved out and got my own place. Then, after I lost the waitressing job, I never exactly told Pam about it. Also, I never told her about my eviction. At our last meeting a little over a month ago, I lied through my teeth. Lying to a parole officer is a violation of parole. Not having a residence and living out of your car is also a violation of parole. I don't like to lie, but I didn't want to have my parole revoked and go right back to prison to serve the last 5 years of my sentence. I couldn't let that happen. But things have turned around. I can be honest with Pam today. Well, almost. Even though it's a breezy spring day, Pam's small office is like 100 degrees. Half the year, her office is a sauna, and the other half of the year, it's freezing. There's no in between. She's got the small window wrenched open, and there's a fan blowing the dozens of papers around her desk. She has to keep her hands on them to keep them from blowing away.
Millie!
She smiles at me when I come in. She's a nice person and genuinely seems like she wants to help me, which made me feel all the worse about how I lied to her.
Good to see you. How's it going?
I settled down into one of the wooden chairs in front of her desk. Great. That's a bit of a lie. But it's going fine. Good enough. Nothing to report. Pam rifles through the papers on her desk.
I got your message about the address change. You're working for a family in Long Island as a housekeeper?
That's right.
You didn't like the job at Charlie's?
I chew on my lip. Not really. This is one of the things I lied to her about, telling her that I quit the job at Charlie's, when the reality is that they fired me. But it was completely unfair. At least I was lucky enough that they quietly fired me and didn't get the police involved. That was part of the deal. I go quietly, and they don't involve the cops. I didn't have much of a choice. If they had gone to the police about what happened, I would have been right back in prison. So I didn't tell Pam I got fired, because if I did, she would have called them to find out why. And then when I lost my apartment, I couldn't tell her about that either. But it's fine now. I have a new job and a place to live. I'm not in danger of being locked up again. At my last appointment with Pam, I was sitting on the edge of my seat, but I feel okay this time.
I'm proud of you, Millie, Pam says. Sometimes it's hard for people to adjust when they have been incarcerated since they were teenagers, but you've done great.
Thank you. No, she definitely doesn't need to know about that month when I was living in my car.
So how's the new job?
She asks.
How are they treating you?
I rub my knees. It's fine. The woman I work for is a bit eccentric, but I'm just cleaning. It's not a big deal. Another thing that's a slight lie. I don't want to tell her that Nina Winchester has been making me increasingly uncomfortable. I searched online to see if she herself had any kind of record. Nothing popped up, but I didn't pay for the actual background check. Anyway, Nina is rich enough to keep her nose clean.
Well, that's great, Pam says. And how is your social life?
That's not technically an area a parole officer is supposed to be asking about.
but Pam and I have become friendly, so I don't mind the question. Non-existent. She throws back her head and laughs so that I can see a shiny filling in the back of her mouth.
I understand if you don't feel ready to date yet, but you should try to make some friends, Millie.
Yeah, I say, even though I don't mean it.
And when you do start dating, she says, don't just settle for anyone. Don't date a jerk just because you're an ex-con. You deserve someone who treats you right.
For a moment, I allow myself to think about the possibility of dating a man in the future. I close my eyes, trying to imagine what he might look like. Unbidden. The image of Andrew Winchester fills my head, with his easy charm and handsome smile. My eyes fly open. Oh no. No way, I can't even think it. Also, Pam adds, you're beautiful. You shouldn't settle. I almost laugh out loud. I've been doing everything I can to look as unattractive as I possibly can. I wear baggy clothing, I always keep my hair in a bun or a ponytail, and I haven't put on even one scrap of makeup. But Nina still looks at me like I'm some kind of vamp. I'm just not ready to think about that yet. I say, that's fine, Pam says. But remember, having a job and shelter is important, but human connections are even more important. She might be right, but I'm just not ready for that right now. I have to focus on keeping my nose clean. The last thing I want is to end up back in prison. That's all that matters. I have trouble sleeping at night. When you're in prison, you're always sleeping with one eye open. You don't want things to be going on around you without knowing about it. And now that I'm out, the instinct hasn't left me. When I first got an actual bed, I was able to sleep really well for a while, but now my old insomnia has come back full force, especially because my bedroom is so unbearably stuffy. My first paycheck has been deposited in my bank account, and the next chance I have, I'm going to go out and buy myself a television for my bedroom. If I turn on the television, I might be able to drift off to sleep with it on. The sound will mimic the noise at night in the prison. Up until now, I've been hesitant to use the Winchester's television. Not the huge home theater, obviously, but their normal TV in the living room. It doesn't seem like it should be a big deal, considering Nina and Andrew go to bed early. They have a very specific routine every night. Nina goes upstairs to put Cecilia to bed at precisely 8:30. I can hear her reading a bedtime story, and she sings to her. Every night she sings the same song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow from The Wizard of Oz. Nina doesn't sound like she has any vocal training, but there's something strangely, hauntingly beautiful about the way she sings to Cecilia. After Cecilia goes to sleep, Nina reads or watches television in the bedroom. Andrew follows upstairs not long after. If I come downstairs after 10 o'clock, the first floor is completely empty. So, this particular night, I decided to take advantage. This is why I'm sprawled out on the sofa watching an episode of Family Feud. It's nearly 1 in the morning, so the high energy level of the contestants seems almost bizarre. Steve Harvey is joking around with them. And despite how tired I am, I laugh out loud when one of the contestants gets up to demonstrate his tap dancing skills. I used to watch the show when I was a kid, and I always imagined going on it myself. I'm not sure who I would have invited to go with me. My parents, me. That's 3. Who else could I have invited?
Is that Family Feud?
I jerk my head up. Even though it's the middle of the night, Andrew Winchester is somehow standing behind me, as wide awake as the people on the television screen. Damn, I knew I should have stayed in my room.
Oh, I say. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
He arches an eyebrow.
What are you sorry for? You live here too. You have every right to watch the television.
I grab a pillow from the couch to conceal my flimsy gym shorts that I've been sleeping in. Also, I'm not wearing a bra.
I was going to buy a set for my room.
It's fine to use our monitor, Millie. You probably won't get much reception up there anyway. The whites of his eyes glow in the light of the television. I'll be out of your hair in a minute. I'm just grabbing a glass of water.
I sit on the couch, clutching the pillow to my chest, debating if I should go upstairs. I'm never going to fall asleep now because my heart is racing. He said he was just getting some water, so maybe I can stay. I watch him shuffle into the kitchen and I hear the tap running. He comes back into the living room, sipping from his water glass. That's when I notice he's only got on a white undershirt and boxers. But at least he's not shirtless. How come you poured water from the sink? I can't help but ask him. He plops down next to me on the sofa, even though I wish he wouldn't.
What do you mean?
It would be rude to jump off the sofa, so I just scoot down as far as I can. The last thing I need is for Nina to see the two of us getting cozy together on the sofa in our underwear. Like you didn't use the water filter in the refrigerator. He laughs.
I don't know. I've always just gotten water from the sink. Like, is it poison?
I don't know. I think it has chemicals in it. He runs a hand through his dark hair until it sticks up a bit.
I'm hungry for some reason. Any leftovers from dinner in the fridge?
No, sorry. He rubs his stomach.
Would it be really bad manners if I eat some peanut butter right out of the jar?
I cringe at the mention of peanut butter.
As long as you're not eating in front of Cecilia.
He tilts his head.
Why?
You know, because she's allergic. They really don't seem very respectful of Cecilia's deadly peanut allergy in this household. Even more surprising, Andrew laughs.
No, she's not.
Yes, she is. She told me she is, the first day I was here.
I think I would know if my daughter were allergic to peanuts.
He snorts.
Anyway, do you think we would keep a big jar of it in the pantry if she were allergic?
That was exactly what I thought when Cecilia told me about her allergy. Was she just making it up to torture me? I wouldn't put it past her. Then again, Nina also said Cecilia had a peanut allergy. What's going on here? But Andrew makes the most valid point. The fact that there's a big jar of peanut butter in the pantry indicates nobody here has a deadly peanut allergy.
Blueberries, Andrew says.
I frown. I don't think there are any blueberries in the refrigerator.
No.
He nods at the television screen where Family Feud has entered the second round.
They surveyed 100 people and asked them to name a fruit you can fit in your mouth whole.
The contestant on the screen answers blueberries, and it's the number one answer. Andrew pumps his fist.
See? I knew it. I'd be great on this show.
The top answer is always easy to get, I say. The tricky part is getting the more obscure answers.
Okay, smarty pants.
He grins at me.
Name a fruit you can fit in your mouth whole.
I tap a finger against my chin. A grape. Sure enough, the next contestant answers grape and is correct.
I stand corrected, he says. You're good at this too. Okay, what about a strawberry?
It's probably up there, I say. Even though you wouldn't really want to put a whole strawberry in your mouth because it has the stem and all that. The contestants manage to name strawberries and cherries, but they get stuck on the last answer. Andrew is cracking up when one of them says a peach.
A peach! He cries. Who could fit a peach in their mouth? You'd have to unhinge your jaw.
I giggle. Better than a watermelon.
That's probably the answer. I bet anything.
The final answer on the board turns out to be a plum. Andrew shakes his head.
I don't know about that. I'd like to see a picture of the contestants who said they could fit a plum in their mouth hole.
That should be part of the show, I say. You get to hear from the 100 people surveyed and get the rationale behind their answers.
You should write to Family Feud and suggest that, he says soberly. You could revolutionize the whole show.
I giggle again. When I first met Andrew, I assumed he was a stuffy rich guy. But he's not like that at all. Nina is certifiable, but Andrew is nice. He's completely down to earth, and he's funny. And it seems like he's a really good dad to Cecilia.
The truth is, I feel a bit sorry for him sometimes. I shouldn't think that. Nina is my boss. She gives me paychecks and a place to live. My loyalty is